All right. Thank you. And it's nice to be part of a new professionals panel. I suppose being part of an old professionals panel is not as cool. But anyhow, I want to acknowledge my co-authors here. This work I'm going to talk about today is just a small piece of a much greater collaboration between San Diego State University and Harvard School of Public Health on health disparities in Accra, Ghana, as a model for the rest of sub-Saharan Africa. I also want to note there's a shift in title. It's been many months since the abstract deadline, and the work's evolved a little bit. We're still talking about drinking water patterns in the urban slums of Accra, but with much less emphasis on water quality. But stay, it's a good story. All right, nothing to disclose. And let me quickly acknowledge NIH for funding and our local partners on the ground, the Ghana Water Company and the Water Research Institute in Accra, for their logistical support. Now, I realize I'm a year late. The water theme was last year's APHA, and everyone probably remembers that. So hopefully you're all well-versed on the water and sanitation problem, which is that over a billion people lack access to an improved water source, and the bulk of that mortality burden is borne by children under the age of five. But in fact, about half of the developing world suffers from one or more diseases associated with poor water and sanitation services. So let's take a look at Accra, Ghana. It's the capital of Ghana and pretty representative of what's going on in the region and much of the developed world. The big problem is overpopulation. The government just can't keep up in terms of infrastructure. They can't put pipes in the ground fast enough to keep up with population growth. And as population expands in areas that are unserved, you start to see the rise of poor living circumstances and ultimately slum development. And Accra also very badly needs another water treatment plant. This is a huge capital expenditure that the government just isn't prepared to tackle right now. There isn't a shortage of water in Ghana. It's just a matter of capturing it, processing it, and distributing it to people, and that's pretty much the problem you see in much of the tropics. So we're hoping that as Ghana starts to extract oil from the Gulf of Guinea over the next year, that there might be funding for these types of infrastructure improvements, but you know, we'll see. So the result of this is that there's rationing of the urban water supply in Accra. There's only enough water to fill about half the pipes at any given time. So the number of days that you may receive water is influenced both by geography, how near you are to the major water lines and distribution network, and also income, because wealthier residents and people who are paying customers are more likely to receive more regular water supply. So a response to this has been privatization of water resources, and the fastest growing form of this privatization has been sachet water, which is this little plastic sleeve of water that's about half a liter. And this originated in Nigeria. It has become ubiquitous in most urban areas in Western Africa and is quickly expanding. And if you go back to, say, 2003 DHS statistics, when asked about primary water sources, sachet water was only a primary drinking water source for a low single-digit number of residents in Accra. And as you jump to 2008, 2010, you see that those numbers are jumping to high single digits for wealthier communities and up into the 40 to 50% range for lower income communities. So this is a really major shift in drinking water sources, and there's virtually no literature on this. Now, one of the reasons sachet growth has been so explosive over the last few years is the way it's packaged. This is the machine that produces the sachets. They're pretty inexpensive, real low barriers to industry. So you have both corporate bottlers that are producing sachets, and you have small cottage industry, mom and pop type businesses. And these machines filter or treat water. It's pumped through a plastic sleeve, heat sealed and snipped, and then the sachets are packed into plastic bags, thrown on a pickup truck, and out they go to the market. It's an incredibly nimble and flexible distribution structure and has done very well at filling gaps and getting water out to places where there are systemic shortages and real poor water access. So Accra's drinking water infrastructure doesn't cover the whole city geographically, and even fewer households have a house or yard connection. And you can see there are greater disparities between high and low income. Now, the Ghana Water Company Limited, GWCL, has this mandate to reduce NRW, non-revenue water. Non-revenue water is water lost in the system due to leakages, faulty meters, unbilled customers, piracy, things like that. But the problem is the focus is on revenue-generating customers. So again, we see lower-income communities, and particularly the slums, least likely to get that kind of service or infrastructure upgrades. So let's take a look at what this looks like on the ground. Here are some pictures from my fieldwork. You see that there's great inequality of drainage infrastructure. In the upper left, you see an upper-class neighborhood, and down through the lower right, which is a borderline slum community. And this is really critical for how communities are able to get rid of waste in their area. Standpipes rarely flow daily. You see standpipes put into the ground for political reasons. They do throw a big party, and then the water stops running 3 weeks later. It's very common to see, in addition to the rationing, systemic water shortages where the pipes won't run at all for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. So this is very disruptive, and in an urban setting, mind you, you have people often going a kilometer or more seeking out volumes of piped water for household use. Forget about for drinking water. So what you see is landscapes like this in the slum communities where we do work, where people are living literally without any kind of water or sanitation services. And you can imagine the health impacts, particularly in a situation like this, where you can see the white PVC pipe in the foreground carrying drinking water through what is essentially an open toilet. So all sorts of problems. Communities have to store water in order to overcome these access issues and the travel distances and so forth. But what you primarily see is these sorts of plastic containers, things aren't protected. You don't see safe water storage vessels. There's been a big push for that in rural communities, but you don't see that in the urban setting. And this is where sachets came in. We started to think, well, maybe this is sachet water is circumventing this water storage problem because the sachets are sealed. They're not exposed to any sort of contamination, cross-contamination processes until point of use. So, you know, living in those kinds of circumstances, like the pictures we just saw, maybe there's the potential for some sort of health effect. We looked at this as maybe this is one of these accidental experiments where really low-income residents actually have, on average, access to a better quality of drinking water. And perhaps there are health effects. That's ultimately where we're looking to go. So today's study is situated within a series of papers that I'm working on for my dissertation. First one just looks at an overview of the sachet industry, its growth over the last few years, the economics, regulatory issues, and so forth. The second is what we're talking about today, the drinking water patterns in the urban slums. Third will be the effect of this water rationing process on a broad spectrum of health indicators across all different socioeconomic strata. And we hope to eventually get out to the peri-urban communities, which are currently the fastest growing parts of Accra and projected to perhaps, again due to infrastructure issues, become the slums of the next decade. So our current hypotheses are threefold. The first one is based on this notion that we're seeing sachet growth more so in poor communities than wealthier communities. And so we speculate that sachet drinkers might be the poorest of the poor. So we speculate sachet drinkers tend to have worse living conditions than fellow urban slum residents consuming piped water. Secondly, we think that there are neighborhood effects of the rationing and that more severe water rationing at the neighborhood level will be associated with higher sachet consumption in the slums. And this is rooted in the neighborhood effects literature. And finally, the health question, which we won't talk about today, but this is where the rest of this paper is going. We operationalize the health effects as sachet consumers are less likely to have reported diarrhea or other symptoms in the previous 2 weeks. Now, the study design is based primarily on a household survey called the Housing and Well-Being Study, and I'll talk about that in more detail on the next slide. We'll be looking at data from 1,281 households. We also drew a follow-up sample of 32 households where we did do some water quality metrics. We were testing water at the source and water in the stored containers in people's houses and looking at quality differences. And we did a few in-depth interviews just to root out a little bit more nuance about water-seeking behaviors and purchasing decisions. Our primary dependent measure, our outcome of interest, is sachet use. That's drawn from a survey question, what is your primary source of drinking water? It could be sachet use or anything else, piped water in the home, outside the home, well water, borehole water, and so forth. And again, the second dependent measure will be that illness variable, but we're not going to cover that today. Our independent measures are in a few different categories. Our primary exposure of interest, again, is that water rationing variable, which I'll talk about in a minute. We have a broad spectrum of socioeconomic status-related variables, household expenditure data, and a few biophysical variables, which I will talk about in a couple of slides. The analysis presented today is simple logistic regression. Ultimately, we're going to port this analysis into a multi-level model where we have three hierarchical levels that are driven by the Housing and Well-Being Study of Accra. 37 enumeration areas. These are statistical units created by Ghana Statistical Services for completing the census. There are over 1,700 in Accra. These 37 were chosen originally in a 2003 study by UN Habitat that was looking at slum areas as kind of an add-on to the 2003 DHS. So this, our Housing and Well-Being Study of Accra, which was driven primarily by Harvard School of Public Health and University of Ghana, was meant to be a replication of that study. And within those 37 enumeration areas, you can see the numbers of households and individuals we've captured. So the individual level data, being able to control for age, sex, and so forth, is the piece that we're missing, that the data is just not ready yet. The upside of this is that this study was just completed this past March, so this is relatively hot off the press, data that was collected about 6-7 months ago. Water quality metrics were captured using the EC kit, or E. coli kit. This is a developmental method created by Susan Marcotte's Civil Engineering Group at MIT. It's a developing method. I'm not going to say too much about that. You can ask me about that later. Because it's a new method, we did redundant testing at the Water Research Institute Microbiology Lab, where we did the gold standard membrane filtration test for total coliform and fecal coliform. So let's get into some results. So here are the descriptive characteristics from the Haws households. Again, this is the 1,281 households. And we see that the sachet consumption outcome is about split 50-50. And so we went and looked at all of our variables, and I've got them split into categorical, continuous, and looked at the differences between groups. So how are sachet consumers different from their counterparts? And ask me about this during Q&A, because there's some interesting things going on here. But generally speaking, what we see is that people in the sachet group fall into the worst outcome for the categorical variables. In other words, the worst type of dwelling, the worst access to bathing facility, worst access to waste disposal, and so on. And for the continuous variables, they tend to have the lowest number of rooms per dwelling, implying most crowding, lower daily expenditures across the board, except for the drinking water expenditure category, because clearly they're paying more for the sachets. And so we're seeing already evidence for hypothesis one, that the sachet drinkers really are the poorest of the poor. And frankly, I wasn't expecting this much variation in a study that's only looking at residents in these 37 slum communities, but there was quite a bit of variation. So here's a map. I'm part geographer. You knew this was coming. So this is the sachet uptake mapped here. And there's a little bit of spatial order correlation. Communities with higher sachet consumption rates tend to be near each other. And I'll come back to this in a minute. Our descriptive characteristics at the neighborhood level include, again, that primary outcome, exposure of interest, rather, days of water rationing in the enumeration area per week. We also looked at these biophysical variables, EA elevation, and the proportion of land cover that is either vegetated or impervious. We use those biophysical variables because in previous work that we've done in the geography department, we've shown that some of those land cover features are very highly correlated with socioeconomic differences across Accra. But again, because we're looking at just slum communities, we lost a lot of that variation, and those variables fell out of the model. So here's water rationing mapped, and you can see the best access in green and worst access in red. And if I overlaid the distribution network, the water mains, you'd see that pretty much follows that pattern. So there's much stronger spatial autocorrelation here. This is significant at the 0.01 level. So this was an important thing to capture in the model. So we began a model building exercise, building off of that days of water rationing variable. And this is what we ended up with, a nice parsimonious five-measure model. There was so much multicollinearity with all of those measures a couple of slides ago that it was nice to be able to work down to five. See that days of water rationing, for every day of water rationing or every day without water access, you see the odds ratio of 1:3:2. We imply that there was about 32% more likely to be consuming sachets as their primary water source. When you look at type of dwelling and solid waste disposal, you again see that the worst outcome for those two measures were associated with the sachet consumers. And then having one or more boys aged 5 to 18 in the household made households about half as likely to consume sachets. And what's going on there is increasing the size of the household. You have larger demand for water, and you need to buy water in bigger quantities. And so those households tend to shy away from buying the more expensive sachets. Daily water expenditures for non-drinking water, again, inversely associated with sachet use. That kind of makes intuitive sense. That variable also helped a lot with model fit. There's not really a whole lot to interpret there. So here are the residuals from that model. They're completely random. There's no spatial autocorrelation left. What we see is that the rationing variable is actually picking up all the spatial dependence in the model, because naturally we expect neighborhoods near each other to be more alike. So that was kind of nice. So highlights from the water quality assessment, and these are the 32 households we revisited. More than half of them do store drinking water, usually in one of those plastic containers like we saw earlier, and for about a day. And stored water had consistently higher coliform levels than the source samples. This is consistent with the vast literature on quality degradation of stored water. And we tested a few sachet samples as due diligence just to see if there would be any red flags there, but there weren't. Sachets are generally clean and generally considered a safe form of water delivery. Highlights from the in-depth interviews were a little more interesting. We heard consistently that fetching water is more troublesome than paying for it. So again, this whole concept of willingness to pay comes into play here. And we saw that drinking water is not considered a major expense compared to other household expenses. When we looked at the expenditure for drinking water relative to all other daily expenditures, daily core expenditures, the difference is only about 1.5% higher for sachet consumers. When we translate that into dollars, it's a difference of about a dime, which is the cost of three sachets. So there you go. So this notion that higher priced sachet water might be perpetuating poverty might be kind of a specious argument. We're going to come back to that in a future paper. Finally, people don't necessarily fetch water from the closest source. Their social networks and transportation logistics, such as where they work and so on, are important. And we may introduce another neighborhood level measure to capture those social networks. There's some other literature showing that presence of markets tends to be a nice proxy for social interaction within communities. So finally, the big picture implications here. First and foremost is that the sachet industry does seem to be filling important service gaps for water delivery, but the even bigger picture is for sachet policy development. The government has, over the last year or so, considered various taxes and even bans altogether for sachet water. And this is because of the reality that all of these little plastic sleeves end up getting thrown in the gutter and clogging drains and causing flooding, and it's really kind of an environmental disaster dealing with all this plastic. There just aren't the economies of scale to do recycling yet. So the government has periodically been about to institute a tax, and then there's public uproar, and then they kind of roll it back. So nothing major has happened yet, but there still isn't an answer to dealing with this environmental problem. And again, if oil revenues enable future build out of infrastructure, sachet water may be something that disappears as water access via the piped infrastructure improves. But in the short term, you know, the government needs to be aware that this is really, really going to affect the poorest segments of the population and, you know, kind of exacerbate that marginalization, as I've got here on the slide. So the ongoing research, I'll leave the slide up for you to look at while we take some questions, but these are the kinds of themes we'll be looking at as I continue this. But what we're after is this holistic understanding of water insecurity that we can port to other locations in Western Africa and hopefully the rest of the developing world. So thanks, and look forward to your questions.
So in addition to the sachet industry, you also have kind of the traditional naturally bottled water, which like costs twice as much. So where did that fall into your data? Kind of, did you see any effects of that or any differences between groups that would utilize?
So bottled water in Accra is really an ultra luxury item that's really just there mostly for expats from Europe and North America, and you really, it's a tiny, tiny slice, like less than 1%. So it's something we're able to pretty much ignore. It's not twice as much. It's like a cost multiple of 10 to 20 times. It's a really big difference. Yeah.
You may mention that in families that were maybe larger, or it seemed like you said that had more boys, they often used other sources of water. Is that right? The mention that you had in there?
That's correct.
And okay, so do they normally get the large tank water delivered? Because I know in a lot of like developing or in some countries, even undeveloping countries, they have large tank water they deliver in like 5 to 15 liters.
Exactly. The tanker service is a growing industry, but still kind of a minority situation. People have the big, like the 55-gallon drums where tanker service will stop by once a week or so. You don't really see a whole lot of that. The demographic variables, though, were interesting. You didn't see significance for girls age 5 to 18 because girls are more likely to be involved in fetching water than the boys are, so that kind of confounds that a bit. And what was interesting is you don't see the relationship for boys or girls under the age of 5. And what's happening there is that even though there is a increased household demand for water quantity, what we heard a lot from our qualitative interviews, and that's why the in-depth interviews are so important, is that people oftentimes will use sachet water just for their babies. And then once they reach a certain age, they'll switch back to regular water because there is that kind of understanding that it's pure and it's safer, but you know it's not a sustainable thing for them to be drinking. So that kind of confounds that relationship for the under 5 categories. All right, thank you.